We'll go ahead and start again, just in case I didn't get recorded. Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the council meeting for April 18th, 2017. The time right now is still 7 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, please call the roll.
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutterback, Rasmussen, and Gamble.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback, will you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please let the record show that Councilmember Hanford is in chambers now. Good evening, Councilmember. And was Councilmember Camp, had he identified that he was not going to be here this evening? Okay, so we'll announce for the record when he comes in. And I did receive word from Councilmember Davis that he's out sick this evening, and so we'll consider him excused unless there's objection. Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on with the agenda. Under announcements and presentations, we have AB 17070, confirmation of Planning Commission appointment. About a week and a half ago, I had the pleasure of interviewing three absolutely excellent candidates, and both Ben Swanson and I met with them, and Ms. Heather Rousey, did I say your last name correctly? Thank you. Ms. Heather Rousey is the person who I'm bringing forward this evening for my appointment, and I'm requesting your confirmation of her appointment. She has lived in, actually she was born here in Monroe. She's a fifth generation resident of Monroe, and graduated from Monroe High School. She and her husband own a business on West Main, not far away from the flagpole, and they have a coffee house and a roastery there, and then they also live in a house that adjoins the business. So very unique in that she's lived here for a very long time, native of Monroe, and a business owner here in town, and very adjacent to the downtown. So I'm requesting council's confirmation of her appointment. Councilmember Rasmussen.
I'll move to confirm the mayor's appointment of Ms. Heather Rousey to the Monroe Planning Commission.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutterback to confirm the mayor's appointment of Ms. Heather Rousey to the Monroe Planning Commission. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Just clarify, I made the motion.
Yeah, didn't I say that?
No, you said Hanford.
Yes, okay.
I'll take the motion.
You'll take the motion? Okay. I'm very sorry. I haven't had my caffeine this evening. I think I knew where I could go to find that. Being given a Coke Zero, though. So, again, the motion was from Councilmember Rasmussen. The second was from Councilmember Cutterback. And any discussion? Councilmember Gamble.
Well, I just really appreciate you coming over or coming willingness to serve. I think it's fantastic to have someone with your background. And, I mean, how could you go wrong with Bearcat? I think it's fantastic. Exactly right.
Okay. Please let the record show that Councilmember Camp is in chambers. The time right now is 7:04 p.m.
Wearing a Bearcat cap. I just pointing that out.
Councilmember Camp, to bring you up to speed, Councilmember Rasmussen has made a motion. Councilmember Cutterback did second to confirm the appointment of Ms. Heather Rousey to the Monroe Planning Commission. And do you have any questions or discussion? Okay.
Welcome aboard.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move to vote. We do have six council members present now. Councilmember Davis is out sick.
Everyone uses the chair.
Okay. All right. So we do have a motion on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 6-0. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Go ahead and administer your oath of office. Please raise your right hand. I'll go ahead and read it for you, and you can choose to swear or affirm. Heather K. Rousey, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and the State of Washington and ordinances of the City of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of Planning Commissioner according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding. I do.
So, Heather, congratulations, Commissioner.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is the...
What a privilege, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, go ahead, Councilmember Kent. Yes, we'll turn on the fan.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is a proclamation for the 2017 National Day of Prayer. So, proclamation, National Day of Prayer, May 4th, 2017. Whereas one of our nation's great strengths is the freedom we hold dear, including the freedom to exercise our faiths freely. For many Americans, prayer is an essential act of worship and a daily discipline. And whereas today and every day, prayers will be said for comfort for those who mourn, healing for those who are sick, protection for those who are in harm's way, and strength for those who lead. Today and every day, forgiveness and reconciliation will be sought through prayer. Across our country, Americans give thanks for our many blessings, including the freedom to pray as consciences dictate. And whereas we give thanks for our liberties, we must never forget those around the world, including Americans who are being held or persecuted for their convictions. Let us remember all prisoners of conscience today, whether their faiths or beliefs or wherever they are held. Let us continue to take every action within our power to secure their release. And let us carry forward our nation's tradition of religious liberty, which protects Americans' rights to pray and to practice our faiths as we see fit. And whereas annually the President of the United States of America issues a proclamation designating the first Thursday in May as National Day of Prayer, now therefore I, Jeffrey Thomas, Mayor of the City of Monroe, do hereby support and encourage the residents of Monroe to join me on May 4th, 2017, in observing the National Day of Prayer, and join citizens of our nation in giving thanks in accordance with our own faiths and consciences for the many freedoms and blessings, and in asking for God's continued guidance, mercy, and protection. Pastor, can I be the reporter? Thank you very much for all that you do.
And I wanted to invite all of you to the May 4th National Day of Prayer Sky Valley, which is held at the First Baptist Church by the hospital, Thursday night, 7 to 8 o'clock. So 7 o'clock, hope to see you there. And we love you and appreciate all you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor.
All right, the next item that we have on our agenda is a presentation from Snowpack related to Snowpack. This is Dispatch Consolidation Study. Mr. Mills. Please note that before you, at your positions, is a copy of the PowerPoint presentation.
Good evening. Thanks for inviting us today. My name is Kurt Mills. I'm the director for Snowpack 911. And I'm here with my colleague, Terry Peterson, who is the director for the other 911 center, or PSAP, in the county. And we have an update for you tonight on what's turned into about a year-long process so far, evaluating whether it makes sense to consolidate our two 911 centers, two PSAPs, into a single entity. By way of a little background, As I said, there are the two 911 centers. We've both been around since the 70s. We both do 911 call answering, dispatching for police and fire agencies. And then there's a third entity named SERS, the Snohomish County Emergency Radio System. Again, a separate entity. Their responsibility is to provide some support and maintain the voice radio system that's used by public safety, police and fire countywide. So both Snowpack and Snowcom agencies all use the same radio system, countywide interoperability. The concept here is that the two 911 centers would evaluate whether consolidation makes sense, and then if the decision is to move forward, the CERS folks would join us in that activity. So we invited them to the table early on so that they could make sure we didn't go too far down a path that didn't work for them, and then join us if that's the direction we end up. So a map of the county, the gray area is supported by Snowpack, that manila color is Snowcom, and then the blue color is something we call the jointly served area, or JSA. It refers to an area that is supported or dispatched by both Snowpack and Snowcom. There's a little white area there down in Bothell. It straddles the county line. It's considered a King County 911 center. So a little background, many, many years ago a decision was made on how calls are routed and how funding is allocated between the two 911 centers. And as we evolved our technology, we began to be able to quantify some of the impacts of those decisions. And really what it comes down to is there's a lot of 911 transfers between Snowpack and Snowcom, an awful lot. And anytime you're transferring a call, it results in a delay. And not every one of the calls is a life and death emergency, but a lot of them are. And when you get up with this high volume of transfers, it does have impacts to public safety. The county E911 office back in 2015 hired a consultant to come in and do an independent study. And that study concluded that there was an opportunity for improvement of service and improvement of costs with consolidation. And so we formed our own joint task force that has representation from the different agencies. So that group is comprised of 911 folks, police chiefs, fire chiefs, mayors. It's a pretty broad spectrum group that's trying to look at this issue. This is an illustration of the transfer issue that I talked about that's pretty much a challenge. And the red line there that's marked demarcation is kind of an arbitrary line that was drawn. And if you dial 911 in that blue area above, the call will be routed to Snowpack. If it's a fire or medical call, that is dispatched by Fire District 1, and Snowpack will transfer that call to Snowcom. The reverse happens south of the line, where you call, if it's a police emergency, you get transferred up to us. And so when you look at the volume of calls, it's about 44,000 calls last year. When you add up the time that folks are spending on hold, it adds up to about 11 days. That's time of folks with emergencies sitting on hold and waiting, and of our staff staying on the line waiting for the other PSAP to answer. So this was really the driving factor of why we started looking at this.
Mr. Mills, so the way that things work, as council members have questions, you're going to hit a button up here, and then I get to see the light go on. If you just glance at me as you get to the bottom of your slides.
Sounds good.
Yeah, perfect.
Thank you.
Councilmember Kent?
Thank you. Just so I understand, this is not an automated process. The 911 call comes in to the northern part of the red line, and the person receives it, they determine that it should be transferred, and then it's a manual process to transfer it?
Correct.
Okay, so there's no
So the trick is, so in most of the county, when you're served by both or by a single PSAP, it doesn't really matter if you have a police or a fire emergency. The key is that some of those calls that are made there are for the police and some are for fire. And when people dial 911, the system doesn't know which one until somebody on the other end of the line answers the call.
Okay.
So that's really what it breaks down to. Now, the fact is about 85% of the calls are law enforcement, which is why you see such a huge difference. One in five of the 911 calls that Snowcom receives is a transfer to Snowpack, where one in 50 is a transfer from Snowpack to Snowcom.
So you may not have this information, so I'll accept a wild guess. Are we, in terms of the calls that have to be transferred, they're mostly medical, they're mostly police?
Well,
or they're not even?
No, about 85% of the calls are law enforcement. So 15% of those calls are for the fire department. And of those 15%, about 60% are medical.
Okay. And those are the ones that get transferred?
The fire and medical calls.
And the medical. Okay,
yeah.
So it's not just the medical, it's the fire.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So I talked a little bit about the joint task force. Now, we've been going at it now for about a year. We hired a consultant to help us, somebody from King County who had experience with PSAP consolidation. She's been a tremendous help. And all along the way, we're checking in with the board members, giving them updates, making sure they feel like we're on track, getting redirection when necessary, and then going back and doing another little chunk of work. And so we've been meeting now, and it's accelerating a little bit. As you'll see as we get later in the presentation, we're making pretty good progress. We're trying to be extremely transparent in our process, so we put all the documents up on a website. Both Snowpack and Snowcom's websites have an identical listing of all the meeting summaries and letters to the employees and just a library of information.
So in terms of service levels, both of the boards agreed that there wouldn't be any reductions in levels of service. So both agencies today provide 911 services. We're both doing a pretty good job, but there are some subtle differences in service delivery. An example of that might be that Snowcom enters in some ancillary paperwork on behalf of our member agency. So the boards looked at all of these services and said, you know what, if we're going to consolidate, there won't be any reduction in any level of service being provided today. To back to your question more about transfers, there have been some mitigation efforts. So you guys might be familiar with the New World system that was installed in October of 2015. So New World has provided us the opportunity to try and mitigate this problem. And what I mean by that is if there's a call taker at Snowcom or Snowpack and they receive a call that can be transferred, part of that call can be entered into that shared New World technology. So the problem has been somewhat mitigated, but it hasn't been resolved. We're still transferring, 44,000 calls, 50,000 calls back and forth each and every year. One thing I should mention that was really important that the board decided early on in the process is that because through consolidation, there's going to be some cost savings through a reduction of total headcount. But the board took that an additional step, and they wrote a joint letter to the workforce that promised that there wouldn't be any layoffs as the immediate result of a consolidation. That was really important for our workforce to hear because we didn't want people, fleeing and going to another dispatch center. And we'll talk about how those two things come together, how we can downsize and not lay people off, and how that makes sense. I promise you it does. The other thing we should probably point out, consolidation wasn't the only option that we looked at. That is the option that we're here discussing tonight, but there were several other options in between. Things like, well, let's just take all those calls in that jointly serviced area and route them up to Snowpack, or take all those calls and route them out to Snowcom. So there were several other options that were evaluated, but none of those options fully addressed the problem, and all of those other options significantly shifted 911 funding or revenue sources for both the dispatch centers, creating some instability in revenue. And all of those other potential options also left some pretty heavy procedural and operational issues. So none of those were really good issues, and none of those, again, solved the problem. In terms of redundancy and resiliency, this was something that the boards told us early on was really important. And the reason is that Snowcom and Snowpack, they back each other up. So if Snowcom needs to evacuate our facility, somebody can go over and physically flip a switch, and all of our calls are immediately routed up to Snowpack, and Snowpack staff can process those calls until staff physically leave Snowcom and drive up to Snowpack. That's from Mount Lake Terrace to Everett. And Snowpack can do the same in reverse, although it doesn't work as smooth for them because they're a larger organization, and they have to split their staff between Snowcom and Snohomish County DEM. But generally speaking, there is a certain level of resiliency because of the two facilities in the Oregon, in the county. So being that that is important, you know, the board's asked, well, what would we do if consolidation occurs? Are we going to keep staff in both locations, or are we going to co-locate to one location? And so we started to evaluate the status of the two buildings. And what we've decided, or what the proposal is that all staff will be relocated to the Snowpack facility in Everett, and the Snowcom facility in Mount Lake Terrace will remain as a warm backup. And what I mean by a warm backup is the lights will stay on, the power will stay on, the water will be running, the servers and equipment and all the workstations will be up and running and warm and ready for somebody to use in a backup scenario. So all the staff at Snowpack, if there's a need to evacuate that building for some reason and bug out, then calls can get rerouted down to Snowcom, and then staff will arrive and process those calls. So there's a warm backup facility.
I think the good news worth mentioning as well is our county is probably ahead of the vast majority of counties in the country in terms of having a backup location. Even though we're separate agencies, we're on the same phone system, we're on the same computer system, we use the same radio system. Any one of Snowpack's dispatchers can go down to Snowcom and log in and be familiar with the equipment and the systems and perform the key functions of their job and vice versa. And you don't have to look too far in other parts of our region and see that they just don't have that. That's a product of good planning and cooperation between the two boards and member agencies.
In terms of fiscal impact, as I mentioned already, full consolidation is really the only option that we looked at that completely solves that transfer problem, which is the biggest problem that we're trying to resolve. Should the agencies choose to consolidate, we believe that we can reduce headcount by a total of 15 FTEs. And what that results in is about a $1 million savings every year. So an annual savings of about $1 million. It allows us to retain the existing levels of redundancy and resiliency, as I mentioned. The biggest change, quite frankly, is going to be in the governance and how the organizations are governed. So both organizations, as Kurt mentioned in the beginning, have been around since the 70s. They have separate governing boards today. There's a lot of discussion about how to jointly govern a consolidated agency.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
You said earlier that there wasn't going to be any layoffs. Now you're saying that 15 FTEs, $1 million savings out of those two. What am I not understanding?
Yep. Great question. So both organizations today have a attrition rate or a turnover rate of about 10% every year. We're going to let attrition take care of it. So we've done the math, and we think that we can quote-unquote right-size or downsize to the appropriate size within 1 to 2 years.
Okay.
So that $1 million number is assuming that we've gone through and we waited that 1 to 2 years for attrition to occur, and we have downsized to the appropriate size.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Councilor Hanford? Okay. Good. Thank you.
In terms of governance, this is where the rubber hits the road, so to speak. There's recognition that there's about 52 or so agencies that will participate, or that could potentially participate in this consolidated organization. A 52-member board isn't going to work. Nobody's going to get anything done. So there's recognition that there needs to be some form of participatory governance. So that means some people will not be able to have a seat at the table, and they'll have to go through some sort of caucus system to participate in that governance structure. Where the Joint Task Force is landed right now, of course, none of this is set in stone, and all this is a moving, has a lot of moving parts to it. But where the Joint Task Force is recommending right now is that we land in a board between 12 and 19 people. I think they land on 15. The 15 board members would be split. Five would go to fire service providers, 10 would go to police service providers. And those individual board seats between police and fire would be split roughly proportionate to population of the county. So smaller cities would, there would be a smaller city caucus. The legislative body of those smaller cities would send their reps to the caucus every year, or whatever it is, every year or 2 years. And then the caucus would pick their rep for that participatory governance seat on that 15-member board. The boards and member agencies thought it's really important to have a balance of elected officials and operational folks. And the idea, again, is that elected officials are holding the purse strings, if you will, and operational folks are more driving from the policy and service standpoint. So they thought having a balance or between those two was really important for the organization to succeed.
It's probably worth mentioning that in terms of representation for Monroe, it likely won't change much from what it is today, although with a larger number of agencies, it'll probably be diluted a little bit more. Chief Quinzer has sat on the Snowpack board for many, many years before I've been here, and he's our police TAC chair today. So the likelihood of that same opportunity will continue to exist. There'll just be more people from the pool to pull from.
And just in final comment, in addition to the 15-member board, there's also some, you could think of them as subcommittees or technical advisory committees, and that's made up of operational folks from around the county from police and fire that would continue to provide advice to the board on the best way to run the operation.
All right, so kind of a status check of where we are today. Both boards set forth looking at four general topics that they wanted the joint task force to focus on, and for a large part in the same order of priority. We have, I think, resolved three of those issues, the service level issues related to 911 transfers. We have a solution for that through consolidation. It also has some other benefits, including equalization and providing the same level of service across the county. Right now, there's subtle differences between service levels, how quickly 911 calls are getting answered. And so in addition to transfers and that item, we also think that that'll add a little bit more capacity. Now, what happens sometimes at both of our PSAPs is if there's a big event, it stresses your capacity. So a Marysville Pilchuck or an OSO or a Linwood stabbing or those type of big events always put strain. And having a single PSAP gives us more capacity to meet that demand. Of course, there's always the big one that can overwhelm a PSAP, but I think that'll bring us all up into an equal playing field. As Terry had talked about, there's a cost savings opportunity of about $1 million annually. Once we're fully right-sized, we'll be able to maintain the redundancy and resiliency of having two PSAPs, which is something we have today and we want to continue. And really the big issue right now is working through governance. And the boards had asked us to nail these other things down. I think we've done that, and now the focus is what does a board look like when you have 53 agencies? Lots of opinions.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. You mentioned the big event and the impact it has. Now, would you use a backup center for a big event? That's traditional calls.
For an ancillary? Yeah, as a matter of fact, we have 8 workstations set up at the County Department of Emergency Management right off the Emergency Operations Center. We have the ability to staff those. Now, since we put them there, we haven't had to. But as Terry mentioned, too, is if we have to leave our center, we'll send some of our folks up there,
right,
and then we'll send some down to Snowcone.
Yeah, and that makes more sense. I was just thinking of a backup center. You mentioned that your center had to be evacuated or something, which is probably not going to happen that often, but other bad things which could impact your system. So there would be a good need, a big need for a backup center that could be used, like, as an ancillary.
Right.
The capacity issue is something that could happen, you know, on a day-to-day basis. So, for example, there was a stabbing at Auburn Mall in Linwood here several weeks ago. And the first 911 call we got was there was a stabbing. The second call through the 130th call was that there was a shooting. And so it quickly unfolded into this, you know, huge volume of activity. And Snocom received literally 130 calls in a 30-minute window when we're used to receiving about, you know, 25 during that window. So you only have so much capacity given the staffing that you have in the dispatch center. So what Kurt was talking about with capacity is through consolidation, you have more people available at one time to handle those peaks in volume for issues like that.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So we recognize that if we're to do this, even though we've got existing facilities, we've got a lot of the infrastructure, there would be some transition costs. Snowpack has enough physical space in our building to have Snowcom co-locate with us, but we need to do some internal renovations. There's some systems integration that we would do that would cost some money up front, but likely save us a little bit, rather than maintaining duplicative systems and that. We need some parking at Snowpack. We don't quite have enough parking, and so we've estimated what we think those costs would be. We haven't gotten to the point of deciding how that might be funded, what that looks like, but it could be funded from a variety of sources, including reserves.
Councilmember Gamble.
That factored into your $1 million savings, or really looking at a 4.5-year return on actually where you would see, as you said, about 3 years until you get to the $1 million savings from a headcount perspective. It's about 1.5 for.
It's not included because they're one-time costs. We didn't include them in the ongoing, and because there's opportunities to fund those from other sources other than assessments, we didn't think that was going to be necessary. Hope that answers the question. So the board's asked us to model what.
I'm sorry, back up just for a second.
You bet.
Your last item, parking needs a snowbank.
Correct.
Five times.
Well, so initially we didn't have good numbers on what it might cost to do some additional parking. Since we produced this slide, we actually got some numbers from the city and just haven't updated the slide yet. It's going to be about $150,000 to $250,000 to add 25 additional parking spaces to our facility.
Just for that, yeah, the last asterisk there, so that's, you've already done the consulting study, so that's on top of the 1.5.
No, that was just a contrast that we included. There was some concerns about the consultant study that they were trying to minimize some of the transition costs and inflate the savings. And so as we went through our process, we looked back to the consultant study to see how we matched up. We just included it there as reference. That's their independent analysis.
Transition costs.
Okay, so the board's asked us to model what assessments might look like. And so we sat down and we essentially took what we thought were the best of the two assessment formulas from Snowpack and Snowcom. And we knew that it had to be fair and assign costs appropriately, police versus fire, and have some way for those agencies that have custom services, like a couple of ours do, to fully carry the cost of those services. So we modeled this out, and just for a point of reference, of course, nothing's in stone yet, but the Monroe Police assessment for 2017 is $284,553, and based on our modeling, we're estimating the assessment would be $269,100 based on all the 2017 figures. So when you looked at this countywide, there was close to $1 million worth of savings spread across the county. What was interesting about it is more of the savings hit the Snowcom agencies, primarily because the Snowpack agencies are already experiencing a lot of the economies of scale given our size. And this brought Snowcom savings up to meeting the same, or benefiting from the same economies of scale.
So in terms of next steps in the process and where we're going from here, so over the next couple of months, we'll continue stakeholder outreach meetings such as this. We've talked to, I think, 8 or 9 other city councils and Fire District 1 commissioners and the Snohomish County Law and Justice Committee. So we're out briefing everybody, trying to get everybody up to speed with what's going on, what potentially might happen here in the future. So if the boards tell us on Thursday, there's a joint board meeting, if they tell us, you know, we like your progress, we like what the joint task force is doing, we authorize you to continue moving forward, over the summertime, we'll start to develop a new interlocal agreement for a consolidated agency. And we'll probably engage with some legal staff. I think what that would look like is there would be a team of lawyers and city attorneys from around the county that would get together and draft this new agreement. And the idea is that if you get enough participation from various cities around the county, then when it goes back out for all city review, then, you know, it's been pretty well vetted through agencies that people trust and know. So that work would happen over the summertime. In the fall, in September or so, we would go back out and present the information to the joint board meeting. We would ask the board for their opinion, and they would probably take some sort of advisory vote. That information would then get communicated back out to you all through another briefing, roughly in October through December. And at some point in that latter time frame, then you guys would be asked the question of, are you interested in signing on this new consolidated interlocal agreement or not? That's roughly what we think how the decision will roll out. So if all those moons align, and I'll admit this is extremely optimistic, but if all those moons align in that order and in that time frame, a new agency could start work as early as June of 2018. But there's a lot of steps in that process. There's a lot of people that have to get on board, and you know, the governance issue alone is still out there and being worked on. But potentially that's what could happen.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
So if I read the last slide on the money correctly, are we currently paying $284,553 to be part of Snowpack?
Yes, sir.
And if consolidated, we're going to be paying $269,100.
That's what the model is based on the 2017
for savings of 15.5, basically. And we don't have to pay any portion of this remodel money up here.
That hasn't been decided yet, but there are funding sources that probably wouldn't have to.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike, do you have anything further?
Councilmember, are there any other questions or comments? Chief, you've been involved in this. Do you have anything further that you'd like to add?
Well, I guess what I'd like to add is there's three issues really facing the agencies and the cities and like, and the first one I'd look at is officer safety. These transfers have a lot to do with officer safety, and it also have to do with you getting a response or the people that affects a quick response. The next thing I would look at is costs to the city. If there was a huge increase, we need to keep working and try to come up with a better resolution with what this is, but there's actual decrease for us. And the last issue that we need to be looking at is governance. I've been on the Snowpack board for 13 or 14 years. Every time this consolidation's been discussed, each year probably just a little bit, but every time it came down to the issue of governance. And that is the biggest roadblock as far as making this happen. And I think it can be overcome, but it's going to have to have everybody's cooperation in order to do that. So.
Got a couple of questions up here, comments. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yes, this looks great. I feel for you, Chief, for what you're saying there as far as the power struggle or governance struggle, however you want to word it. This, to me, makes total sense. Seems like a no-brainer. Hopefully, the governing boards can come to some cooperation and make it happen. Especially for the officer safety and resident safety factors, that's concerning. So hopefully we can get this done.
Thank you.
Thanks. Councilmember Scarborough.
Chief, so what I've heard you say is this, how many years has this been discussed? 13 that you've been on?
Not officially discussed, but discussed in board meetings.
So it's all come down to territorial governance. Who's going to be in charge?
That has always been the roadblock, yes.
So all of this that you guys have done is to try and get over the, this is mine, this is mine, and that's mine, and you can't have it type thing.
I think there's, I'd say this, there's, this is going to require compromise. Mm-hmm. It is a significant change, specifically for the SNOCOM agencies, who every one of the agencies has a seat on the board today. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, that's a significant change. Well, what I think we all hope, I know Terry feels the same way, is that we can solve this transfer issue. It is an officer safety issue. It's a public safety issue. There may be opportunities as this progresses for elected officials to express their opinions and thoughts at a joint board meeting or other venues. And if you have opinions, we would love to have them expressed. Or you could send the chief with a message from the council.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
I'm sorry, Councilmember Scarborough, did you have anything else?
No, Chief, I just hope that you vote and I'll pass the loans what to doing what helps officer safety and reaction time to the 911 call for citizens.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble?
Oh, this is great. Appreciate you guys coming tonight. I did have one question. I was reading between the lines, Kurt, when you were responding to the $1.5 million, and there's other funding sources there. What are the other funding sources that we're looking at?
So both the PSAPs have reserves that could be tapped.
Okay.
And to me, that seems like the most logical place to go. And how that would happen and the specifics, how it would be split between SNOPAC and SNOCOM hasn't been decided. Well, really, none of it's been decided. That seems like the likely place to go.
Reading between the lines from the previous conversation, that maybe the reason why you balked a little bit is because that would be up to the boards,
correct.
In order to agree on that.
Correct.
And then the other funding source would be a potential open assessment.
It could be an assessment. We've talked about E911 dollars, grants. It could be a lot of places.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutabach.
Well, I appreciate the thoughtfulness that's obviously gone in the process and the transparency, because when you're trying to do this, obviously, I think that's one of the most important things. And then with the transfers, I mean, $44,000, it's crazy. Are there stories that you could share of how then the system failed because of those transfers? Because I think that's something that could influence and drive people, is if they hear real stories of how, you know, a transfer happened and it failed, and that might help convince people who are somewhat territorial that the right thing to do.
And that's a really good point. That I'll add that we surveyed our employees as one of these steps to get their feedback. And for the most part, people were supportive of this. So you imagine, and sharing your own experiences, to know that those are the people that are going to get impacted the most by consolidation. And they're generally supportive of it. And I think that's because they're living this every day. They hear the challenges of transferring calls where they can't answer the next call that they know is there because right. They're transferring the call. During a couple of the presentations, we played audio from the Mukilteo shooting that occurred, where it's right on the border between Everett and Mukilteo. Mukilteo SNOCOM, Everett's us. Calls came to SNOPAC. I think the first calls came to us. trying to figure out what was going on. By the time we realized where it was and transferred the call, SNOCOM was being overwhelmed with calls, and the caller got a recording of all lines of business. And it's things like the, you know, those heart-wrenching moments that I think for Terry and I and all the police chiefs and all the fire chiefs in the county are so passionate that this is something we have to fix.
Yeah. I think it's important to keep sharing that type of story. You know, you share the data and the cost savings and why it makes sense, but you also share the emotional story side of it, why you have to do this.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
All right. Anything further, Council? Do you have anything further to share?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You said
that.
Data. I like data. No data. Oh, data. Potato, potato. Yeah. All right, we are now moving into comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. You do have a sign-in sheet. It's blank. Commissioner, would you like to say anything?
No, I'm good. Okay.
So seeing that there's nobody else here to come forward to speak, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Hanson.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Second.
Yeah, a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Hanford, the second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. We're going to move on now to new business item number one. This is AB 17071, ordinance number 009-2017, amending MMC 3.26, public work or improvement. First reading, Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. We're going through a review of our contracts that we do public works construction projects for with, and our design construction document supervisor has been going to some classes that are put on by Municipal Research and the American Public Works Association, and they were suggesting some changes we make to our contract bonds and things like that. And we're having the city attorney review those. He noticed that there is a missing part in our city ordinance that allows the bonds to be in favor of the city rather than in favor of the state as required by the RCW. So this is just and it's allowed to have the city be the recipient of the bonds. We have an ordinance that says that. So this is the cleanup to the code to allow the bonds to be directed towards the city. That's the extent of my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to accept as first reading ordinance number 009-2017, amending chapter 3.26 MMC, public work or improvement, designating the city of Monroe as the obligee of contract bond posted by contractors on city public works projects, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
We have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action as written in Agenda Bill Number 17071. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is new business item number 2. This is AB 17072, ordinance number 010-2017, amending the 2017 budget. First reading, Ms. Hassert.
Thank you, Your Honor. So this evening, first reading, we're presenting our pretty much what a housekeeping measure for your budget. Basically, what we're doing is we're truing up all your beginning fund balances, and then there was some action that's already been taken by council the first part of this year that we wanted to recognize in the budget. The biggest change in the budget is bond refunding that we closed on back towards the end of March. That's why you see such large numbers, that they do offset each other, or pretty darn close to offsetting each other. The difference actually is a little higher in the expenditure side, but that was rolled into the bond refunding as well. So with that, I'm not going to go through all the details. Diane did a fabulous job with all the detail in the attachments, but I am available if there are any questions.
Council members, any question or motion? Councilmember Campbell.
Yes, sir. Move to accept this first reading, ordinance number 010-2017, amending the budget for fiscal year 2017 to account for actual beginning fund balances and new revenues and expenditures, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second. A first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Camp. For the requested action as listed in Agenda Bill number 17-072, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is council member reports. First item is the P4 committee. Committee was canceled this evening. We'll go ahead and move down the line. Councilmember Gamble.
Yes, good to be back. So this Saturday, I know in the past, a year or 2 years ago, Councilmember Rasmussen, when there was a Comcast Carriers Day event right here in Monroe at the Boys and Girls Club. And there is another one that's coming up this Saturday on the 22nd that is out on Fern Bluff Road. So the Horses Healing Heroes, I don't know if you guys are familiar with H3, which is up Fern Bluff Road. It's a nonprofit that helps wounded warriors past and present with a focus on veterans with PTSD. Volunteers will clean and organize, build pre-made metal corrals, fix fences, and perform light carpentry, chip concrete, and landscape. Volunteers will also help care for the horses that day. And it's organized by the Comcast employees out of the Everett office. So we'll have several hundred folks descending upon Horses Healing Heroes out there on Fern Bluff, and would love to see community leadership there in any way, shape, or form if you could make it.
What time?
Breaks will be provided.
Time?
8:30, 9 o'clock.
And that's this Saturday.
It's this Saturday, yeah. That will be too. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's see, we have a question from Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yeah. Just a comment with the Comcast Carriers. They, as I understand, they are having so many volunteers on this project that they're having parking at the Boys and Girls Club Senior Center. We've already filled that area and showing people all over.
Yep. Thank you for pointing that out. And we are doing several Boys and Girls Club around the sound as well. So my folks are doing the Auburn location, the Lakewood location, and then our first group. So thank you. And a YMCA down in Auburn as well.
That's what we can.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I'll be doing a March of Dimes walk this Saturday, so I was drafted into that.
Nothing unfortunate about that.
I know. The kindness of my wife's heart. Yes. Just a couple of things. First, the egg hunt on Saturday. I'm sure others will speak to this again. Incredibly well organized. A lot of fun. The only tears I saw were the occasional boo-boo as they're walking around. It was entertaining watching the little ones step over the same egg three or four times before they finally figured out how to pick it up. And I noticed that when the bigger kids were doing their egg hunt in their section, it looked like Target on Black Friday. It just was gone as soon as they hit it. I attended the DMA meeting last night with Sam Lowe. Very interesting. He had some interesting stuff he shared. I don't know what was about to say. He was kidding about the confidential stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, however that works out. But it was really interesting. And we got a chance to hear from a lot of the community about some interesting issues locally. I've had a request for 5-2, I guess. I'm really out of the loop with Boy Scouts now. But the Lions have completed their flag ceremony prep. I would like to do that for the city council on May 2nd. If it would be at all possible, it would be kind of nice if we get Nuke with his appointment calendar to give a presentation to the kids as well, that we can work that out. If the 2nd doesn't work, we can pick a time, it would be great. And that's all I got.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll follow up with staff on the flag ceremony with the Lions. Is this at my pack?
It's part of the Boy Scouts.
Okay.
Cub Scouts.
I know they're Tigers.
Wow.
You said Lions.
That's my.
You know that was coming.
We'll follow up. Then. What was that again? Information for you and follow up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Customer hit Rasmus.
And then again.
I'm just, you know. Sorry.
Excellent, yeah. Well done to the parks. Somehow they continue to create the good weather. So, I mean, rain held off and successful. Well done. We'll have to do it again.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yes, I attended the Snohomish County Fair Breakfast on Friday. And saw you there. And it was a wonderful event. Great to see so many community leaders. Very great message. And about caring for others and showing love to others and grace. So it's very good. Something we all need to do.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutback.
Councilmember Austin, I appreciate you both attending. I thought it was a great message. It was great to see. There's probably 500 people there.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
I think that's important.
Thank you. Okay. Retraining myself. Okay. We go to the community development update this evening. Mr. Swanson.
Thank you, Council Mayor. So this isn't in your package. You'll have the monthly report from community development along with the development map. One thing I did not include in there was an update on the recently approved temporary full-time permit tech position. And so when I was up here last, I echoed some concerns about it's a good economy, it's not a permanent full-time position. We're nervous on, you know, some of the, you know, how many applicants we're going to get, qualifications. Well, it turns out we've got 106 applications.
Wow.
So we're in the process of, Ben is in the process of weeding those down, and he'll tear them down. Then Community Development Department will start taking a look at it.
That's good. A lot of choices.
So good news on that front. You know, we're really concerned, you know, how many we would get. And then I know talking with Ben, some of the past part-time positions had a hard time getting a good applicant pool. So
could I ask, yeah. How long was the ad?
It's just over a week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was gone for a week, and I posted up the Friday before I left, and I got back on Monday. This morning we had 106, so still coming in.
Wow.
How high they were. Yeah.
So it's good.
Great.
Same.
Where was it posted?
Yeah.
The usual spots.
AWC.
AWC on our city website, which also goes to indeed.com. And Craigslist is always a low cost, so I threw it on there for $45. So there wasn't a heavy recruiting cost. Most of those are free, except for Craigslist. So.
Was there a decimal off on the advertised salary?
No. No, it's a good question.
Now he's going to look.
Good. So good news. We'll work on that, narrowing it down, and set an actual interview date. I know a lot of staff is excited to get that person on board. So we'll move forward with that. Next, going back to the community development report, I know Councilmember Cutback asked for dates or locations to be put next to the business licenses, and so we moved forward and did that. And Councilmember Camp also had a comment at last night's meeting, and it showed some duplicates under new business. And so what happens is when we go to develop this report, we essentially just pull off of the state's website all the listings for new businesses. And what will happen is somebody may change from a corporation to an LLC, and that will reemerge as a new business. And the nonprofit world, there are variations that may reemerge as a new business. So you may see somebody that says new business and they've been around for, you know, a year or two. Those ones will slip by every once in a while. But just wanted to give you a heads up that those are being pulled directly off the OLC website. And so if there's any additional questions on that, we did leave the addresses off the home occupations just because it seemed a little creepy.
Yeah.
But included them on all the businesses.
Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. And then one thing, I'm sorry, Commissioner Scarborough, or Councilmember.
Commissioner.
That works.
I'm going to blind you real quick.
So, one thing, if I can find my laser pointer on here.
So, about 2-3 weeks ago, we had discussed this plat and the concerns about emergency access to the site. So, Public Works and Community Development worked together, and more Public Works, and were able to get an easement for emergency access. So, it'll be a second easement. We don't have dollars to construct the actual, but the most important one.
That's how that M?
It's M, yeah, correct. And so
into the existing
into this existing area right here. And so, you know, again, we have the land, which is the most important part, and then we'll try to work because toward the back part, and I'm not sure if you remember that, of the plat, they have their pond and some open space, so we'll be able to work a road in there and then just put like an emergency gate with a Knox box for fire to get to access through. So yeah, we were able to do that, and the applicant, I got to give a lot of credit to Pulte Homes. They were very cooperative throughout that entire process and very, very nice to work with. So a lot of thanks to Mike at Pulte. And then just a few amendments that will be coming your way that I wanted to go over. One of them is actually, it's not an amendment. Before we start on this major repeal of the development code and replacing it with brand new code, we have some very high level questions that we were requesting direction on. And so that will start out at the Planning Commission and go through Planning Commission, and then once they give the recommendation, we'll take it to council and present it in front of council. And again, this is, I know Zach likes to say 10,000 foot. We're even higher than that on this one. It's very general direction. We just want to, when we go out for our request for proposal for a consultant, we don't want to spend time and money going down the wrong path in case council has absolutely no interest in going down that path. And so that'll be coming forward here, I don't know, maybe a couple weeks, maybe a little further out from that, or than that. Other items that will be coming before the council is the downtown plan, or the code amendments to the downtown area. Planning Commission worked on that for about a year and a half, and so put a lot of work into it. When I came on board, they had just finished up. There were some additional questions that and issues that I wanted to go over with Planning Commission before I brought it to council. We're having that meeting on Monday, and hopefully finalize everything, and then that will also come forward. There's also a permit process code amendment that will come forward, and it essentially takes away that right now we have the hearing examiner for preliminary plats approval, hearing examiner recommendation to council approves. This proposal would actually remove council from that area, and it would just go to, like many jurisdictions, a hearing examiner approval with council approving final plat. So we can discuss that when I bring it forward. Other than that, we're probably going to start pulling back on the code amendments, except for the necessary ones like impact fees and capital facility elements, just so we can start focusing on this major comp plan update. Otherwise, we'll end up kind of nickel and diming our time as we go through this process.
You said a major comp plan update?
Or comp plan, excuse me.
It's okay, I am too. all right, so we've got a couple lights. We'll go to those lights and follow up on a couple things. Councilmember Scarborough.
You said downtown. What, you know, I mean, it may have, should have directed it maybe to Brad, but I see the lights in the first block. Lights we approved. What's the time frame on doing it in the other?
Those are put up for the downtown businesses to have the choice which style they like, and we received that, and that's scheduled from between May 1st to May 12th to be put in all of downtown.
And the decision, just as a reminder, was straight. So the downtown preferred straight as opposed to the zigzag. Councilmember Hinford.
Thank you. Yes, so thanks, Ben. A couple of questions for you. Well, the first easy one my daughter will be asking. I saw the McDonald's application. Mm-hmm. So do you know when they're going to be demolishing and doing all that?
When they're going to start the full remodel? They just, I mean, not too much along, too long ago got their variance permit, and so I don't know where it's at in the building cycle. They submitted, and I believe they have approval, so I think it's resting on McDonald's when they're going to start.
Okay. And then the, now I can tell her I asked, thanks. So then the other question was, for the downtown zoning code, it looks, when I read through that, it looks like we're making things, trying to include as many possibilities as there can be for increasing density in the downtown for neighborhoods and multi-family dwellings. I love to see that. We need to do as much of that as we can and increase the affordability of housing. And the only way that we're going to do that is by allowing these multifamily dwelling units, allowing duplexes, allowing mother-in-law apartment type setups. Not to get on a soapbox, but we've talked about this before. Some of the seminars that I've gone to with affordable housing, things like that, is that it's all doom and gloom because of the way that it is currently in our region. And so whatever we can do to help with that, I think we should, and this is great to see, but let's keep turning thoughts and turning ideas around, possibly working with Housing Hope some more, whatever we can do to do our part to address this affordability housing crisis that is going on. I'd love to see.
Yeah, and I think Monroe actually got a really good start on that with the through the comp plan and the comprehensive plan designations. There's a lot more opportunities for multifamily and high density development than there have been for, I think, ever. And so it's really moving in that direction. And then the opportunities, I know the mayor and I discussed this, the opportunities for redevelopment, the infill development, is working out, to me, very well. One thing, that the hardest things you can get is somebody to take advantage of that existing infrastructure and maximize those areas, which doesn't work very well. And you'll notice on your map, you have HC, I think K is another one. I, Creek Farms, that was a bigger parcel. I and L, those were a little different. But those other ones, and we do have some potential, or potentially have some more coming in, of taking advantage of those infill areas, which is fantastic. The city struggled for years trying to get that. And so if we're at this place with the current zoning, I think it will have much better luck in the future once we adopt the new zoning for the comp plan.
And Councilmember Kemp, I'm sorry, there we go again. Councilmember Hanford, I'm thinking back of light, Jim. So you can keep it on. That'll confuse me. You're doing Morse code now. So Councilmember Hanford, one of the things that we talked about last night in the Downtown Monroe Association meeting was the importance of having affordable housing and things like that. And one of the things that I brought up was the fact that we had an incentive program that where we would forgive, I think, park impact fees, school impact fees, and I don't think transportation impact fees were one of them. But it was because of that the 44-unit Monroe Family Village was able to go in, and it was to the tune of a couple $100,000. I'm forgetting the exact number right now, but right around 200 seems to stick in my head. And we, because of budgetary reasons, ended up repealing that section of code with the intent to come back and look at it
it'll be part of this this replacement of our existing development regulations that will allow the Planning Commission and Council to look at that and say, okay, do we want to put bookends on it so that we don't wake up one day and find our budget if with, you know, a $200,000 project, that's great, but if we're not planning for it, that's a problem. So we're going to want to find a way to maybe have a, you know, a threshold of how many units were, you know, is it $50,000, is it $100,000, whatever it might be per year that we're willing to put out there as a threshold, or maybe we were good with the way that it was before. So that's one of the things that we'll be talking about. And then, right, just like Ben said, we've really increased the density around our downtown and along West Main. So. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Good. Just, I was curious about the indoor marijuana issues. Are you just looking at gardens farming, or is that what we're doing?
No, that's a good question. So we went through the process, the emergency adoption, and we had our public hearing. So that was our interim process. Now we're going through the typical process of taking for the Planning Commission. It goes down to Commerce for review, and those proposed amendments would reflect exactly what Council adopted. But this would be essentially the permanent ordinance. Does that make sense?
Okay. So the next step is the Planning Commission, or?
Correct. So we were essentially taking what Council approved at the public hearing,
right,
and those striking deletes. We'll take that through Planning Commission, explain kind of the history of how this came to be. Planning Commission will review it and give their recommendation of approval or denial. During that time, we'll run CEQA on it, which we're required to do. We'll send it to Commerce, which we're required to do. Then it'll come back to Council as a proposed code amendment, the permanent, as opposed to that interim 6 months of the leading.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I've asked, and this isn't, you're not aware this is coming.
But you're going to help with it.
I've asked Mr. Mosley to give an update. There's a pre-application for a subdivision within our urban growth area, literally adjoining our city limits and north of, and again, adjoining the farm at Woods Creek. And so Mr. Mosley is going to go ahead and give just sort of some background on that. And I think Mr. Swanson's going to chime in.
Yes, I think it was a couple of weeks ago we received some information from Snohomish County about a pre-application. It's not vested or anything at this point. It's a pre-application for an area. Ben, would you show that area again? It's in our urban growth area.
Those two parcels.
Yeah. Okay. It's in our urban growth area. It's outside the our city limits. And it's a fairly dense development. I think it's 110 homes, lots. And so it raises some issues about, you know, county development in our UGA. And so we've responded, and whether or not we would get any impact fees from it, you know, or those kinds of things, which we've had some conversations with our city attorney. So we've reached out to the property owners, to the representatives of the property owners, to see if they would be interested in annexing to the city. And we have a meeting next week, or we're trying to set up a meeting next week with the representatives. So I just wanted to share with you that this is an issue that purely at a staff level right now we're working through. We're hopeful that we can encourage them to annex to the city. But we will... And so far they haven't indicated that they were adamantly opposed to it. But, you know, there are issues, obviously, that we'll need to work through. And I just wanted to give the council a little heads up that there is that potential development in our UGA to the east of town, but outside the city limits. Ben, is there anything else that I need to...
No, you pretty much covered it. The site itself is pretty heavily covered by critical areas. So, straight here.
Okay, so it's that
area. Yeah, that one.
Does it extend all the way down?
Can you zoom in on it?
Just the...
Is the plus sign so the council members can see from the road stub maybe from top middle? There you go.
So it's adjacent, is this?
Is that whole area?
No.
This is the farm.
Right.
I know, but.
I mean, I'm for my own verification.
Okay. Correct, it is. Yeah, and so.
What is this?
These are the two parcels that they're looking at right here.
Can you put up the roof? There you go.
Right where the hand axes are in the spell. Connected through this road is the farm, and then cut out and connected with, I don't know what road that is.
What is that?
The reservoir.
Two what?
It's a reservoir.
No, the road that runs along here.
Ingram.
And then it would connect into Ingram. And then on both sides of those, they've identified some you know, wetlands, things like that.
Wasn't the school district trying to look at that for a school site at one time?
The triangle? Oh, for a school site?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, they were doing the one out, the one I heard about was the one out on Old Owen.
Okay.
It's past where Greg's with Thorns Acres.
Back like Mike Murphy days?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was some time ago, but I thought Mike Murphy, when he was doing, we were looking at this, for a possible that person that owned it wasn't particularly interested in selling at the time. So,
so let me go ahead and call on the lights. Councilmember Kent, and then Councilmember Scarborough. Councilmember Kent?
Okay, so this is not my original question, we'll ask it anyway. So the annexation that you're considering would just be those two parcels, you wouldn't include all the other areas around it?
Correct. At this point, that would be our initial request if they are in agreement. Because,
right,
you know, it's easier to annex when people are in agreement to be annexed than when they might have other issues.
Absolutely. Okay, but my original question, assuming they don't want annexation, are we then providing sewer, water, and there are going to be charges at external city rates or whatever, however we handle it?
Correct.
Okay, but either way, we're providing the services for them.
We do allow extension of our water and sewer outside of our city limits into our UGA.
Okay,
without that requiring pre-annexation.
Is that a requirement, or I'm just, do they have options of not using our services, or since they're in our UGA?
Well, I don't think they have an option. I mean, we are the provider of service.
Zach, why did you have something?
Okay. He was moving his microphone.
Ready to chime in if necessary.
No, I was just curious if, I mean, in a worst case, we're talking septic systems they could put in, or where we'd have to deal with that in the future. I'm just curious. And if I'm kidding, putting you on the spot, I apologize.
No problem putting me on the spot. That's happened many times.
I try not to.
With the development that they're interested in of 110 lots,
they're going to have to. That's pretty much what I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, I think is it 14 for minimum?
12.5
minimum. And so for a lot size, and so it just gets them small.
All right, so we're going to be providing services right here, right? We have an answer.
Yes.
Perfect. This is yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Councilmember, cut it back.
So is Ingram the only road that's around there?
Ingram is on the east side of the property.
Yeah.
When the farm was put in, there was a stub road that was stubbed out to the north for future development.
Right.
That it also connected that flat.
Right, but then they would be going in through the Ingram. Having it be the only road.
It's not.
Well, I know you can go
to Brown.
You can go up to Brown from the other way, too.
Up there.
If you go up Ingram, just keep going north there.
Yeah.
Brown Road connects.
Oh, right in there.
Up to the right. A little higher, the next intersection of Brown Road right there.
Put it back right now.
Right there.
Put
your hand down to center.
Or the couple of it. Come over and throw the chain link from there.
You're doing great,
So, councilmembers, just letting you know, we, again, this is 110 homes. Unlike areas in like the Robin Hood neighborhood where you're going to use county streets to go from Highway 2, you know, a half mile or so, you're going to have, you know, if it's not annexed as part of the city, the development that occurs there will be contributing differently to impact fees and real estate excise tax and so on and so forth. They will develop under a different set of standards for all intents and purposes. I think the subdivision is even called Monroe Estates. People living there are going to feel that they're part of, that they are in the city limits. And so we are just sort of monitoring. We're also at the same time going to work with the property owner to see if we can have them annexed to the city. I think it's a better way. The other thing too to recognize is that the county is able to put areas into urban growth areas. The intent is for us to annex the urban growth areas. They don't require a petition. They don't require agreement from the people in the area to be in an urban growth area, but then they expect us to annex the urban growth areas, and they deny us the ability to expand our urban growth areas when we don't annex. But state law works against us by requiring certain things like petitions and votes and things like that. So what we're left with is this expectation, actually this requirement from the state and the county that we annex areas that they've identified for us, but the people when they were identified as being in our annexation area weren't required to vote. The same standard didn't apply to put them in for higher density. So we're going to work really hard to try to bring this into the city because it's what is intended by the Growth Management Act and because it's the best way for us to mitigate for impacts to transportation and parks. The people that live here will be using our road system directly out of the farm at Woods Creek and also off of Ingram. They're going to be going to parks here in our community, and I think it's a better situation if we can have them be part of the city when they develop. Staff will go ahead and work again with the applicant and work with the county, and we'll report back as we are able to make progress on that. But I wanted you all to be aware of it so that if you hear about 110 homes joining the farm at Woods Creek, you've heard it here first. Okay, you're welcome. Yep. Councilmember Gamble.
So as I'm looking at this thing, you know, minus the 110, you're still 550 lots just centralized there in that general location. Let me back up a little bit, where they're all accessing down through Chain Lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talking all the farmers world.
Yeah, I'm talking PQRNJFEODM, all of that right in there. You add that up. That's
like a night test.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And we are. I'm just wondering, do we have anything? There's a natural congestion issue between those two accessing Chain Lake as traffic is coming down, or whether it's a stoplight or. I'm just wondering if it's on the radar, because that's 550 more lots, and what's the average cars per lot or per household?
9.8 trips per day per household.
Right.
So staff doesn't have an answer to that right now. Staff can certainly get back to council.
Question is it on the radar for what's... We're saying that we don't need any road improvements from a traffic mitigation perspective coming off Rainier View Road or going into the farm. Those two kind of natural locations that are accessing the
right.
Road there.
The Chain Lake Road, Rainier View Road intersection is by 2026 will need a four-way stop sign in order to keep your adopted level of service standard. The plan for Chain Lake Road itself was to have it as be a five-lane road, which is what we've been working for, and not because you see, like when we put the trail up in the south part, you know, it's a ways off the road.
Sure, sure.
That was for the future expansion of that.
So that's for the expansion, and still the answer to the question that would be the four-lane stop or the four-way stop.
Four-way stop is the interim measure, yes.
Not an interim to a roundabout, is that what I'm assuming? Or?
Oh.
Okay.
And does that...
It'd be signalized if it, okay. after the widening, with the, you know, left turn lanes added and things like that, when it was needed to go to...
How many lots are there, do we know right now, just in that general...
In the farm?
Yeah, farm, and then the Rainier View Road that way.
I don't know off the top of my head. You know, we can get back to you on it.
Or doubling, or, you know, just per month.
Brad, did the model that you talked about with the 20-something date for a four-way stop there, does that doesn't consider 191st being extended down to the roundabout, does it?
No.
Okay, because that wasn't part of the...
That's not really on the map.
Right.
Right, and that does take into consideration all this development.
Yes.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble, you still have the floor. Anything further?
I'm good for right now.
Does anybody else have any questions, comments? Do you have anything else to add, Mr. Swanson?
Thank you,
Mr. Meslin?
No, sir.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next item that we have is a still under staff reports. This would be Mr. Farrell with our parks update. All right, Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. So, you have the attachment in your packet of the Parks Department update, and I'm just going to run through it really quick here. As far as update for the playground, we are finishing up our staff with the drainage, drain rock, and subsurfacing materials for the playground area, and you may have noticed that the playground pieces have arrived, so they're in boxes and whatnot, and we expect the contractor would be begin Monday with the assembly of the playground. So, moving along. Downtown furniture, I just want to update you from last month. We went ahead and made the order, so now we're just waiting. It'll be about probably another 4 weeks, and then when we receive the furniture, we'll be installing and then removing the old furniture and repurposing that furniture as we talked about. Put your attention to donations, update here. So far this year, the Mineral Garden Club, they've donated $300 towards this year's downtown flowering baskets. And in addition, they every year, including this year, they will volunteer their time potting up the flowers for the hanging baskets for installations by our parks crew, and then we'll take care of them from there. That'll happen in May, the week after Mother's Day, is when we do that. Republic Services have once again committed to donating $500 towards the city's flower program. In addition, they have committed to donating $1,600 to sponsor the four free Movies Under the Moon movie nights. And then last, Community Transit has committed to helping sponsor the Chamber of Commerce's free summer music series in an amount to be determined. Next, the master plan project for a cabin site and Lakeside Park. Staff, we're drafting a request for qualifications for qualified planning firms for these sites, and advertisement of that RFQ is scheduled to occur the beginning of May, so in a couple of weeks. In park operations, a lot of games going on when we can get them to occur with the weather. So crews are busy preparing fields and mowing and sopping up water and things like that. And I also just have some of the events, activities that are going on this month, and it'll ramp up in May, and there'll be a whole bunch more. It really gets busy May, June, July, August. There was the Jamboree in the beginning of this month. We just had the community egg hunt. Yes, it was definitely went very well. Appreciate all the help we get from other departments, such as Public Works and Police Department. So yeah, just a wonderful event. And this weekend, we have on Saturday an ultimate frisbee tournament at Sky River Park. And so we'll have a whole bunch of people squishing around in the park there. And then on Sunday is the kids' fishing day. And that begins at 8 a.m. and goes to about 1 p.m. And that's at Lakeside Park. And then last, I wanted to talk about, well, there's the update before you of the trail inspections for Albemarle Park and Discover Park. So I'm just kind of running through this chart here, the numbers on the dates. You know, since last month's report, there were a couple in March and then in April. I didn't get last week's in here, but the total labor hours were 4, and then 6, and then 7, and then 5.6 is the April average. And last month, the total labor hours average was 8.7. And so that trend tells you, I mean, we had initiated that. There was a lot to clean up that was in the woods, and now being on top of it looks like that average labor hours spent is going down a bit. So that's a one-time average is 5.6 hours. And then same thing with the number of bags of litter collected, and that's just kind of like a benchmark. It's not necessarily meaning that if you have so many bags, just debris that means about that quantity. We had 3, 4, 5, and 4, or for an average of 4, and last month it was 14.5. So we put the volume of garbage we're finding in the woods at Albemarle Park and Scarborough Park. It's gone down. So in the notes, the week of the 21st, a camp was discovered at Albemarle Park, and the police were contacted. Then the following week, removed litter, abandoned camp at Albemarle Park from the previous week's discovery after notice was posted by the police. And then the following week, the first week of April, two camps were discovered at Albemarle Park. Police contacted them. I know since then, the remains have been removed as well. And then outside of the report, I just want to make a mention about our staffing for parks. As you know, we have filled the parks supervisor position with Dale Olson from the Parks Department, and that opened up his previous position, which was the park lead, and then that was filled also by Mike Thomas, who's a park maintenance worker full-time. So then that opened up a full-time park maintenance worker position. So we had advertised and interviewed many candidates for that. I think we had, close to 70, 80, something like that. 80, for that. And George Lopez is going to start work with us this coming Monday. So we're excited to have him come on board. And then, he's not a comedian. And then as far as park seasonals, we have 4 positions to fill. We filled 3 of them, so we have 1 remaining park seasonal position that we're still trying to fill. So we're advertising that locally and regionally.
That's it. Questions, Councilmember Gamble?
So you were talking about, it has been pretty rainy. I know we've had to cancel a lot of stuff. Do we have a financial number as far as expense associated to all the, I'm forgetting the name of the product off of the dry, what's it called?
Oh, the surface?
Yeah, just how much we spend on trying to prep fields.
We track our hours, so I could come up with that thing.
Man hours associated to it, and then what is the name of the product?
Right, Turfus.
Turfus?
Well, it's a brand, but...
That's a brand.
It's a drying agent.
Yeah.
There are different diamond dry.
That's what I'm thinking, diamond dry. Yeah. So how much we spend on that a year... I mean, obviously, this year we probably have more, but it would be. I'd be interested to see how much we budget for one, right?
Sure.
And then on a rainy year like this, how much do we spend?
Yeah, and I gotta say, I mean, this, as we all know, this is well above average. One of what you say, the 4th wettest or something like that. So there's just a lot of water that the park's taking. We have a drainage system that we have an original drainage system at Skyrock Park we're talking about. That's more of an issue than Lake Tai, but it is a little wet up there as well. We have original drainage system, and then we upgraded the drainage system about, it's probably 8 years now. And We just haven't had the opportunity right now. We just need to, we need the rain to stop, so it's, and then we can get equipment out there, and we need an aerate. And it really opens up the, you know, to the drainage there. But it's definitely, yeah, a lot of water, and it's a lot to handle. So, so yeah, I can, I'll do that and get those figures.
Sure. Anything further? Councilmember Sturber.
Fine. Is it my observation that, and maybe the chief can answer this, it looks like the cans just keep moving back in. Clean them up, they move back in.
Well, I think in the community, I, you know, I wouldn't necessarily just the parks, but, you know, they're wooded parks, so it just, what I've observed, you know, the woods along the river and then also the bypass area seem to be hiding places, you know, the people. So, you know, we're, our staff are weekly, which is, yeah, yeah.
Don't take that.
Oh, okay. No, no, no.
I'm not saying you're not doing anything.
No, I just, they'll go back in and find cover again. Okay. They're not leaving the area.
Are they doing that on the other side of the river? Do we know? Or you have the massing clean them?
Yeah. So yeah, there was a return to the area, an encampment that came back to the area. It was what, 2.5-3 weeks ago, and the sheriff was called. So DOT, as I understand it, went in to clean it. It was on the south side of the river, on the westerly side of 203. DOT went in to clean it up, is what it sounds like. And the people that were in that encampment, it sounds like it was maybe two or three of them, not a large number of them. Ended up having a discussion with DOT. The DOT then contacted 911, and our officers showed up on scene before the sheriff did. And then, so the answer is yes. That is an issue that we continue to work with citywide. Yeah, it's an issue that continues to go outside of our city limits, and that's one of the reasons why we have the embedded social worker that we're sharing with the county, because the issue of homelessness doesn't know boundaries. And she did start work, what, 2 weeks ago? She's in training, a week and a half ago. She's in training right now. And Chief, do you have anything else to add?
There was a 911 call about a camp today that was south of the river. But they do move around. We are, those that go into the parks, we have posted no overnight camping there, and we are going to be, instead of giving them a 72-hour notice, we are going to decide at that time for that, if we find them at the campground. Private property still, even though that they have a trespass notice, we have to give them a 72-hour notice and the like, but they do move from one area to another area.
Anything further, Councilman Scarborough? Mr. Burrell, you're still on the floor. Anything? Okay, good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. And now we can go through the staff. Mr. Worthen.
Open site. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Farrell, anything else?
No.
Okay, Mr. Swanson, anything else?
Nothing.
Ms. Hazard.
Just to let everybody know, we filed the city's 2016 annual report with the state auditor as of yesterday. Received the official proclamation from the state auditor today that it is complete. And just as a point of reference, it isn't due to the state until May 30th, so we are in the game.
Thank you. Mr. Feilberg?
Just one thing, in case you missed the road closure notice, the PUD is asked to have a lane closure on Woods Creek Road tomorrow so that they can install the streetlights along the sidewalk there.
Thank you.
One lane or all of
them? One lane.
So you said installing streetlights along Woods Creek?
Woods Creek, yes.
Okay, so that's along the sidewalk.
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome, thank you. Chief.
As many of you know, we've been dealing with school threats in the last 3 weeks or so. The first two, we were notified late, And by late, I don't mean a couple of hours late. We were notified days after they were first noticed by the school district. The last one, after a meeting that was organized by the mayor with the school superintendent and the chairman of the school board, we had a very good meeting and understanding of the issues that are going on, and the last threat that we have, we were up there within 5 minutes after they noticed it. So it gives us a lot better chance of apprehending the individual or individuals that are doing this. I'll give you an idea of what what's been occurring up there. March 30th, there was a threat found in the boys' bathroom stall, which read, April 3rd at first lunch, all with drawing of a gun shooting at two separate stick figures. April 5th, another drawing was found in a boys' bathroom stall, which had the date 6/6/17, and another picture of a gun with bullets shooting out. And on April 17th, another threat was found in once again in bathroom 4/7/17. I'm telling everyone, if not then after spring break, with the name Zach. After we have talked to the school district about it, we've also done some research on threats and the like in school districts, and we take every threat seriously, but I have yet to find a threat in the United States at a school where something's been written on the bathroom wall. And usually when someone is intent upon doing harm to our children in the school, they make no announcement of it prior to. They just go ahead about the business, and that is because they don't want law enforcement and the school officials to be prepared for them to come to school. So we are working hard on investigating these issues. The school, it continues to send out the letters each time there's an instance or a threat that comes around. The school has met with every grade of the high school in the school assembly, explained to them the seriousness of it. We consider it a domestic terrorist situation, and the definition definitely fits what we've been seeing going on up there. We will solve the issue. The individual will be, or individuals will be addressed in the sternest way possible. And also persons under the age of 18, it is our intent to recover costs for investigation from the parents of the individual. On a lighter note, a nice note here, we have received from the Special Olympics of the State of Washington a trophy here, and because the Monroe Police Department is for, again, as I said, the Special Olympics, it's the Torch Run Circle of Honor, and the Monroe Police Department has been involved in this for so many years and done so well that they've given us our own trophy, and we just put a plaque on every year how we do. In 2015, we were on the honor roll. And in 2016, we were on the bronze level. The honor roll is if you raise from $1 to $5,000. The bronze level is if you raise between $5,000 and $10,000. And the goal that we're shooting for this year is a silver level, and that is raising from $10,000 to $15,000. I'm very proud of the men and women of that department doing this. They put a lot of effort into it. It's a good, great cause. And on May 2nd, 6 o'clock in the evening, is that about the right
time? That would be good.
Okay, I'll check.
If they can, great. Okay. Check Newt's appointment calendar.
Okay.
I'm sure he's a busy dog.
Okay. That's all I have.
Thank you, Chief. Does anybody have any questions from the Chief? All right. Chief, thank you very much. All right, let's come on up here from our interim city administrator.
Just one item tonight, this afternoon, I, with Officer Johnson of our police department, I attended the homeless response group meeting, and I think the group. I think it's a positive meeting. I think the group understands the city's in a difficult position, but they appreciate the fact that we're trying to approach it in a holistic way, and particularly pleased that we brought the social worker on and talked a little bit about some of the other things we're doing. So was pleased to represent the city with Officer Johnston at the meeting. That's it, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, and for me, just a couple of items of note. We had a couple interviews yesterday for the city administrator and over Skype, and so that process is continuing right now. I attended the egg hunt on Saturday. It was a lot of fun. I even got my face painted, for those of you that saw it on Facebook, with rabbit ears. That was fun. And then had a really good meeting with the school district on, I think, Wednesday last week. It was really helpful, them coming here and just sort of talking through some of the issues that are going on at the school. And I'm really thankful that we have such a great partner in our school district. So I think we should go ahead and go on now to the agenda for next week.
Thank you, Mayor. For the 25th, the agenda is will be a new business item of continuing our downtown fee waiver. The report would be coming to you, and the recommendation would be continuing, and then offering the authorizing Mayor Pro Tem to sign a BNSF construction and maintenance agreement from the railroad crossing project. Those are the two main new business items for next Tuesday. And then for the second, it's a very light agenda, as you can see on the second, and council may consider whether or not to hold that meeting or delay to the subsequent meeting. There may be things that are added also in the next week or so. So we'll have a better idea on that next week.
Any questions about next week's agenda or the extended agenda? Great. Sounds good. And for now, Councilmember.
If we do decide to cancel the second, we need a little bit of a heads up so that we can organize for the scouts.
For the scouts.
Do you want to go ahead and organize for the scouts on May 9th or another date? Just in the event that it.
Will that work? I mean,
if it takes an act, of the council to cancel a meeting, so at this point in time it hasn't been canceled for the second.
I'll ask them about
that. And Councilmember Hanford?
Are you, just to be clear, are you wanting action now, or do you want to address it next week and cancel possibly next week?
Correct, yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
And just for note, I will not be here at the council meeting next week or the council meeting the week after. So our Mayor Pro Tem will be solicitating those meetings. And if anybody needs to get a hold of me, you still can just contact me through the city device. And all right, I think, the lobbyist report, and then we have an executive session.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to repeat the good news from last week, none of the budgets have passed yet. The transportation, capital, operating, obviously, it's unlikely that they will complete the session this year, although we do anticipate that the transportation budget will be adopted this week prior to the completion of the regular session. And that transportation budget does hold the $750,000 for design for the SR 522 widening and interchange improvements. Don't anticipate action on the capital budget till later, which of course, as you know, as you recall, includes the $800,000 for the Lake Tahoe athletic fields. Don't anticipate that action concluding by the end of the current session. Two bills, however, that our city clerk jumped up and down in joy today, seeing that House Bill 1592 and House Bill 1594 relating to some improvements to our public record request legislation have been passed by both houses and sent to the governor for signature. So this was one of the Association of Washington City's major legislative priorities, and all clerks around the state are very pleased that that public records modification refinement has been adopted. That's all.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutback.
Just a question about the funding for 522. So when we say $750,000 for the design of the widening interchange improvement, you're talking about the interchange between 522 and 405?
No.
Okay, I just want to make sure, because I know that is a big issue with the state, and that this just has to do with 522. For our interchange, maybe about
Paradise Lake.
Okay, perfect, thank you.
Councilmember Scarborough.
The public records thing. You say the House bills, or the bills that have been forwarded to the governor for signature, and if he signs them, that makes them
law.
Is there any possibility that the people that have litigation in progress might challenge that? Lawsuit
laws? I'll let the attorney answer that.
Mr. Love?
So if I understand your question, Councilmember Scarborough, the question is whether people who have current Public Records Act related litigation would challenge the enactment of the law?
Yeah.
So
they would see an effect to their cases.
Oh, okay.
And therefore they would say, well, we're not going to abide by that. Could they? Wouldn't they?
I can't really speculate as to their intent, and I'm not, because I don't have the legislation in front of me, I'm not sure whether it purports to have retroactive effect such that it would bear on current litigation that arises out of public records requests that were made before the new law took effect. Be happy to look into that if you'd like.
Yes.
Anything further, Councilmember?
No, thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
No, sir.
Okay. Another item of note, I also was at the Downtown Monroe Association meeting last night. This was sent to me, so I figured we'd go ahead and print a copy so that you can take a look at it. So,
Jeff, this is our first news letter, right?
Right. Anyway, there's some information there, and it was, like Councilmember Camp said, a really good meeting. Lastly, there is, and did you mention that there's special recognition on the agenda for next week?
I didn't. There is special recognition at the conclusion, toward the end of the meeting next week, for Diane Nelson. It will be her last council meeting with us, and we will be doing a special recognition of the city and the council for her.
I was really hoping to do that tonight, because I'm not going to be here next week, but she keeps taking vacation.
Can't say I blame her.
So anyway, I'm really going to miss working with her, and I've known her for some time, going back to when she worked at the city of Duval, and I'm very happy that she has this opportunity to retire. And it sounds like she's going to be moving to Montana, and it's been a real blessing, and really enjoyed working with her, so I'm going to miss her. Great. With all that, we now have a need for an executive session. The executive session is for agency litigation pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, subsection 1, subsection little I, for approximately 5 minutes, with potential action to follow, if nothing else, to adjourn the meeting. So we are now in executive session.
We are now out of executive session. Councilmember Gamble.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Gamble, second from Councilmember
second. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? If you're seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much for reading me.
Good night.
I have a whole bunch of
detail involved.